Good afternoon. We're going to call finance to order at 1:34. Today we're going to hear Military Veterans Affairs. With us today, Representative Newman, Representative Costello, Representative Edgman, Representative Dugan, Representative Guttenberg, Representative Wilson, Representative Guerra, Vice Chair Fairclough, Co-Chair Thomas, me, and Major Cactus. We're going to invite you up here and listen to your overview, and you bring what staff you have. And what we've been doing is waiting as you do one slide presentation for questions. I'm going to try to make this fairly, not short, but as short as we can because we have the university subcommittee following you. So welcome and congratulations again on that star.
Sir, thank you very much, and thank you for having us here today. As several members have sat through some of my presentations, this is a challenge for me, but I've got the clock directly in front of me, and I'm going to try to go as fast as I can to cover what I see as a very exciting department. And the excitement starts with the image that is presented in front of you. We have helicopters, and if we've got that, we're already 90% solution to almost any problem.
Okay. This Representative Stoltz, co-chair, and Representative Sadler is in the audience. And we forgot to announce that a Jerry Jenkins bought donuts for a violation this morning, sitting in the back. And he's from Anchorage and Mental Health Services, so thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
I just want to say that the subcommittee supplied, could have supplied three full rations of donuts.
You let one slip. You might have to backfill that, you know. We got one from the president of the university too this morning, so fattening us up. Okay, General.
Sir, thank you. First of all, as we go forward into the overview of 2012, the overview is going to reflect pretty much what the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs has been doing for quite some time. It's a military component of the Alaska military, much larger process. We take care of our nation by defending our state first and foremost. As is throughout the nation, every state has a National Guard or a military component that is commanded by the governor. The governor protects their particular piece of real estate, their state in itself, look out for its well-being and its population, and in doing so, defends the nation. As I go forward in our presentation, though, Alaska is in a position where we actually have other components which truly do defend the nation, not just by defending our very own soil, but our allies and the nation itself. When it comes to intercontinental ballistic missile protection, Alaska is the one National Guard system that has that at their disposal. Our mission, like I said, we provide the military forces, air and army, in uniform, in either a Title 32 status under the direction of the governor, where we assist with our emergency homeland security and defense asset in protecting our neighbors, our residents here in state. We additionally go into a Title 10 status and fall in through our deployments. Over the past 9 years of war, we've had deployments in both theaters and associate areas around the world. Our emergency response with Homeland Security, any local disasters, not only do the military forces fall in on that, but our state assets fall in and coordinate the different communities and all local resources in order to address the issue. Additionally, our mission is to take care of our aging members, our veterans, not just National Guard veterans, all veterans. And our population is one of the highest density proportionate veterans in any of the states. And at the same time as we're taking care of our elderly veterans, we're taking care of our youth. The Alaska Military Youth Academy, we establish and look at those high-risk youth that are out there. And with the help and assistance of National Guard Bureau, supportive of a program, a state that is 100% behind the effort, we look out and try to redirect some of the energies of some of our youth that have chosen other paths than the high school path to success. We take these at-risk youth and provide them opportunities and some additional skill sets. Of course, those skill sets are provided in a very military style of training, which is a little bit directive and a little bit austere and a little bit tough love. And what we get out of it, though, I'm sure everyone here has had some personal knowledge where they've been introduced and or had association with some of the Alaska Military Youth Academy graduates. So first of all, what do we do? In 2012, we're going to continue to defend and protect Alaska and the United States and its associated allies. We do this through two services, the Army and the Air National Guard. Both services roughly have 2,000 members. Of those 2,000, the preponderance of them are weekend participants. That means they have a job, they're part of a community, they have a family, they live here full-time, and as an additional duty to all of their other responsibilities, they show up 1 week in a month, 2 weeks out of the year on paper, and are trained for deployment. In today's operational tempo, a lot of those service members provide a lot more time than just 1 week in a month, 2 weeks out of the year. Our aviators have additional flight training periods where they're in there staying qualified to the same level as any active duty pilot flying on the Army side. On the air side, the same. They have additional responsibilities. They are out there trained and ready to fight. Our folks that are standing ready in the Alaska National Guard, we have roughly 1,800 full-time National Guardsmen in such missions as the missile defense out of Greeley, the space surveillance system out of Clear. We have the Air Control Squadron, which is working right in the same building as Lieutenant General Atkins, the ALCOM commander, and they handle the communications and the interdiction of any type of a threat response of Soviet incursions into U.S. airspace. They coordinate the assets. Those assets are the F-22 fighters that the active duty flies out of Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. In order to get one of those F-22s up in the air and engage the threat, they require refueling. Out of Eielson, the 168th Air National Guard runs a KC-135 tanker operation that refuel those aircraft as they go forward to engage any type of Soviet threat. If one of the F-22s has a mishap, as unfortunately happened this past year, always at ready is our pararescue assets. We have C-130 rescue assets to support the PAVOC, which is the Black Hawk Sikorsky equivalent in the Air Force, and the pararescue folks attached to it. Those three squadrons provide the rescue and recovery of anyone that would have an issue while flying to engage that service. As an offshoot to that, they also provide a resource in order to help pick up and rescue any of those assets, civilian, that may have a problem in flight. As they move forward, we then have a military police component, which stands ready with new equipment that is coming to the state of Alaska. 2012, you will see a brand new fleet of trucks, a brand new fleet of up-armored vehicles that is applied in order for a response to any type of civilian assistance or natural disaster within the state of Alaska. So overall, we have quite a robust National Guard. We participate as equal co-partners with the active duty and flying the C-17. We have C-17s available, and they are flown equal as the active duty in that relationship. So I think I've covered all of our active duty relations, uniformed military participation. And for disaster preparedness, response, and initial recovery, we have a very robust staff of coordinated state employees that on an average has responded to some type of a state emergency every 90 days. They're well-rehearsed, well-trained, and whether it's a big disaster or a little disaster, the right processes to address it to the disaster policy cabinet, to get the right fundings where it needs to be, and recommend the right information to the governor, which takes into account input from many of the other commissioners, not just a single division, as we go forward to provide assistance to those communities. The youth intervention, the Alaska Military Youth Academy, I addressed briefly, roughly 300 graduates a year. We're going to continue to press. We've got a new director, a retired Marine colonel, who comes on board with a great background and high energy and is ready to move the Alaska Military Youth Academy to a new standard. That new standard being our efforts is not to weed out and call out those at-risk youth. We are going to do everything in our power to keep our graduate rate as high as possible. And that includes going the extra mile to do everything we can to bring them to the acceptable standard that on graduation day they're throwing their hat high along with their peers as they reach graduation. And finally, outreach to our veterans and military families. The veterans, there's a new perception out there. The veterans are no longer an older group of World War II, now Vietnam veterans. We have young individual soldiers, airmen, Marines, service members coming back from 9 years of war. For anecdote, real quickly, my son is not barely 21 years of age. He's on his second tour. And he was just back on his 2 weeks of R&R, or his mid-tour term, this past week. And he said, Dad, I'll take you to the VFW, because he just signed up as a life member. So he's got his card, and he's ready to take his dad, who isn't a deployed soldier. This young 21-year-old. Those are the type of service members that our service organizations are going to be servicing. And as a department, we need to start looking out that some of these youngsters that are now veterans are very capable, very smart, and high energy, and very proud of the service that they provided. So changing with the times is absolute a must.
Questions there? Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A few years ago, we passed a bill that allowed vets to indicate on their permanent fund application that they were veterans, because many of them, aren't, like my father, have never been inside a VFW. And it allowed the vet organizations to do outreach to people to notify them of services that they think they wouldn't normally be aware of. Have you guys been participating in that? Have you seen any results back from that?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg. I don't have the details to provide you that right now. We initially got some pushback as to why you want the information, what's happening. Our initial intent was to identify Alaska Territorial Guard members, and it was expanded to veterans members. There are people that are participating voluntarily with that information, and it is accessible to us. But I'll have to do more follow-up to provide you an exact answer as to what now we have done with that.
Thank you.
I was looking generally in your magazine, and I see you have ceremony guard. Do they travel, or do they stay in Anchorage and Fairbanks, or do they go to rural Alaska upon request?
Our funeral honors team, through the chair, Representative Thomas, our funeral honors teams travel, and they travel extensively. And they are not only trying to provide services within the larger communities, but any communities. And they have gone out there in the dead of winter, and they've been overnighted several nights in storms trying to get back home. But they provide that service as a reminder that no serviceman is left behind. They're also presented with a service medal, and the community response to that has been significant. I just met with the veterans group and got personal feedback on an exceptional job of what they're doing, but I've talked to the members themselves, and they see that as one of the most valuable assignments that they've had, similar to the old guard that performs this same task at Arlington. It's an honor and a privilege, and the members are forever impacted by it. They put their heart and soul into it. So I've got nothing but good, positive feedback. But we go across the state.
That's good to know. I have friends, of course, I'm a Vietnam in-country veteran, too, and I have some that are getting older, some that have died. The American Legion does a fair job, but I don't believe it is a strike. I attended the funeral this summer for the boys that got killed in Hoonah, and the Marine Corps came in there for one who was, I think he was either a Desert Storm or Iraqi vet. And it's nothing better than to see a striking military guard there. So, oh, Representative Garrett.
Thank you. General, one of the big veterans advocates in Anchorage has been working on trying to deal with the homelessness problem and alcoholism problems faced by many of the veterans who've come back after service. One of his proposals is to try and get traction for a housing first unit for people with alcohol problems, out possibly by Iqaluit. He ideally wanted it by the new Veterans Center in Anchorage. But there's a significant homeless problem. There's a significant alcoholism problem. I know it's something that you know about and care about, but it's not listed as one of the department's major priorities, and trying to sort of spearhead efforts to address that problem. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are, because the status quo really isn't that good.
On that particular issue, it hasn't reached the priority, such as expanding our services to our veterans. Part of that expansion is moving off of Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson and making us more accessible. That's the first easy, low-hanging fruit that we can charge with, making the accessibility either over near the Veterans Administration Hospital that has been established, or out to the Wasilla area where the preponderance of the veterans are out in the valley, and trying to give a large group the best bang for the buck. So in that capacity, you start looking at homes. It takes a study. It takes to see exactly what the scope of the problem is. And truthfully, I don't know that scope of that problem at this point.
Just through the chair, I mean, certainly the bulk of the funding at your department goes towards ongoing things like the National Guard and ongoing services. I think we had a research report that said roughly $7 million of the $84 million that goes through the department goes to veteran services. But, I mean, does the department plan on taking a more active role in the sort of alcoholism and homelessness problem faced by vets who come back to maybe not the most welcoming arms?
Through the chair to Representative Gara. Not only those areas, but also the suicide area. Right now, General Carpenter, the acting director of the Army National Guard, had the unfortunate task of announcing that the Army National Guard, all of the United States, has the highest suicide rate that it's ever faced. And it is not an easy answer, but along with suicide is also the alcoholism, the domestic violence, sexual abuse, all of the other factors that weigh in, that Alaska already has a very high standard established. So being sensitive to it, having background in law enforcement, we get the best bang for our buck for us as a community to address those very problems. It is a priority. We're looking at a slide here. I want to correct a little bit there. I've got approximately 2,400 Alaska National Guardsmen serving full-time. It's actually 1,800. But we do have that many facilities, 237 Army Guard facilities maintained across Alaska. Included in that is some of the new facilities with the Air Guard, realistically, because we're moving from Coolis over to a Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. And you'll see that move, after 5 years of planning, taking shape this coming weekend, or next weekend, the 12th of February, as we move what is the left of about 1,400 Air National Guardsmen from Coolis over to some very nice facilities along the northern side of Elmendorf. Quite a bit of capacity and capability increase to a unit that has been doing a tremendous job out of a very, very hometown National Guard base right in the middle of South Anchorage there. That, like I said, is going to be missed, but those folks are going to continue to do the job that they have been doing for the state of Alaska. Disaster preparedness, I'd like to turn this over to Michael Hare to address this for a very quick slide. Mike.
Question is, Representative, Co-Chair Spencer.
Thank you. Welcome, General Cactus. About this time last year, I brought up, and I may have missed it, I got in a little bit late, some of my concerns with a little bit of laxness with the Alaska Veterans Advisory Council, not the membership, but the leadership. And there's some head nodding and how we're going to improve it. I had just a little history. I was a staff member working for a legislator who worked, the legislator I worked for, worked with Representative Foster, who chaired the Military and Veterans Affairs Committee, and created that position for the veteran, and created the director and created the Veterans Advisory Council for an outreach. And last year, I made a committee statement. I think things had fallen down. When the members come in to Juneau, unbeknownst to me, because I had always liked to go participate with them and talk to them, know many of them. Bob Murray, who's I think now on hiatus from the board due to illness, from Representative Gutenberg's region, and Joe Fields and other members, I had a real affinity for working with them, but there was something happened at the top that made a disconnect from being involved with our organization here and other outreaches. And frankly, this year I found out they were coming about 2 days ahead, and they said they can meet with me at 2:00. And we all know what most of us around here do at 2:00. What a disconnect! And you know what happened in the last year when I was a little bit caustic, a little bit frustrated about what happened to the leadership of this organization. And you've got good, dedicated members. They're self-motivated that want to work on veterans' issues. I hope you'll use this as a takeaway that things aren't working right at the top there somewhere. And, you know, I don't want to be asking this question next year again. I guess I can't be any more succinct than that, because it's a very important organization to provide input to the legislative branch. I just wonder how many people even know they're in the building or near the building. I think there's a real dysfunction there, and something, when you have baseball teams, you don't usually you don't usually fire shortstops and outfielders and pitchers. You usually change managers. But with that message delivered, I hope.
Yes, sir.
On a happier note, Mr. Chairman, for the record, Mike O'Hare, Deputy Director of Homeland Security Emergency Management, Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. I'll be brief regarding the results of disaster preparedness. Our focus with the division is to provide statewide catastrophic planning, training, and exercise, incorporating and collaborating with local communities, state, federal agencies, non-governmental, and voluntary organizations, as well as the private sector individuals to be better prepared for a catastrophic disaster. We are really good at the small, medium, and large disasters, as we've seen in the past, coordinating those efforts in response and recovery. It's the catastrophic events that are going to be challenging to us, so we're focusing our plans on that end. We are working toward a 2012 Alaska Shield exercise, which complements the 2010 exercise regarding a catastrophic disaster. We do this every 2 years, and it provided for us in the 2010 exercise 4,500 participants, all of multi-agency participants and partners. And this is one of the 51 events, training events that we try and do every year. Also, 265 individual assistance grants for disaster repair of homes, personal belongings, transportation issues, about $171,000. The focus we're attending to is statewide disaster emergency communications, large training and exercises, as well as incorporating the small local exercises. And then also we are working toward a statewide preparedness campaign to provide tools for individuals, families, households to be better prepared for any disaster that comes. Sir.
Just one concluding area on the disaster preparedness. Every day at 5 o'clock, I get a report up for the Department of Homeland Emergency Management folks, and they tell me what's going on in the state of Alaska. This is forwarded to the chief of staff of the governor and then forwarded to the governor. More and more folks want to get that type of information. Want to be able to provide that for her. One thing I can make sure, because the governor has directed that it is absolutely critical that anytime we have a disaster or any type of an issue going on in any particular legislature's area or district, that we make immediate coordination. Now, we've done that in the past, and we've managed to miss a few in the past, and for that I apologize. But in the future, any type of issue that is going on in any of our districts, we're going to make sure that the information is passed specifically on a day-by-day basis until it is resolved. Youth intervention. Again, we've ranked number one in the nation. Our youth academy, we are very well funded by the state of Alaska relative to the amount of federal funds that are provided in some of the other youth programs across the nation. The National Guard still sees the youth program as a threat to our national security, whether it be obesity or whether it be the amount of folks that are qualified to get into the military or even into any of our private sector businesses. We have to do something to stem that flow. And through the Youth Corps program, where a very strict military style of education is applied to at-risk youth, we have managed to make the school, the academy, function quite well. At total, we've got a little over 3,200 graduates. The folks that are in there in 2010, you can see out of 194 students in the residential phase, 292 students in the post-residential phase, our numbers are up there. It was the second largest graduating class again this year, and our intention with our new director coming on board is to continue that trend of keeping all those that are applied and seeing them through to successful graduation. Requested about the information on veterans outreach. You can see the numbers of dollars that come in to the state as an economic boon to the economy of Alaska. Getting and securing every one of those veterans' earned benefits translates to a better, secure family life, a more stable community that has that funding going into it through our service members as cash flow. So it's to our benefit to continue to secure all the benefits, earned benefits for our veterans. With the population of veterans in Alaska, that equates with their family members to quite an influx to our economy. Then we continue with some of the new education benefits after the 9/11, educating and identifying those programs and facilities that best suit our veterans. Representative Thomas mentioned I'm part of the Yellow Ribbon Program, the Funeral Honors Team. We have numerous other family programs that support our veterans and our serving service members here in Alaska. Roughly real high altitude look at the monies that come into the state. This does not include the direct federal money. This is the federal money and state monies that are put towards those four areas that I've addressed. So our biggest influx is basically the reimbursement of federal money that takes care of our facilities that our members train and function out of in the Defend and Protect Alaska. And going down, you can see, again, the federal funds, the general funds, and then other funds that come into the state.
I have a question for Co-Chair Stoltz.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Carol Cactus, dealing with the Veterans Service Officers for the DAV and the American Legion, the VFW, they always had a calculation of what their budget was. I guess now up to $650,000 or something. I forget the numbers. I haven't done the DMV budget for DMVA. But how much benefits? Do you have a rough calculation of how many dollars in benefits they get per the investment? And it's beyond dollars, I guess. If you find benefits for that specific widow, it's incalculable what it's worth or for that family. But do you have any? I think that's one of the successes. We talk about missions and measures and results. So since I blew up at somebody else, I want to talk about something positive.
Mr. Chairman, if I can pass that to my finance person that's here to be able, if she has the exact figures that we have addressing that.
Through the chair, Representative Stoltz, the last numbers that I received from our veterans administrator was that if, and I believe these are correct, say you don't work with a veteran service officer and you go to the VA to get your benefits, you might get $4,000 worth of benefits. But I think if you worked with your veteran service officer, I believe the number was in the $11,000 range. So that was the difference in working with your veteran service officer to make sure that you're actually getting all the benefits that you've actually earned. So working with the VSOs actually does show a good improvement in the amount of benefits that one receives.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Mr. Chair, very similar to working with a tax accountant as opposed to filing your own income taxes. These folks are very skilled on what areas, and they can provide easy advice, and the return has been very close to what Ms. Culligan has just advised on.
And you're Steve's wife. I knew I recognized you. Okay, I'm sorry.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Another look at our budget in just a little bit different shape. One thing I want to draw your attention to is we have 298 PCNs. So out of the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, those are 298 state employees that this functions for. But when you look at the combined services of the military that's involved in the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, you really have to put another 4,000 members on there. So we're very close to 4,500 folks that are in the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. And the federal funds that we receive for the state funds is very much a good return. Our priorities, I'll try to accelerate here. Our priorities for 2012, continue to recruit and retain our soldiers. Across the board, we've got a good product to sell. We are combining the Air and the Army recruiting efforts. We're not combining funding, but we're recruiting our efforts. So all of our advertisements say, join the National Guard, not join the Army Guard, not join the Air Guard, but we're combining our efforts. We're the first state in the National Guard in the nation to combine those two. Next priority is trying to incorporate the Alaska Aerospace Corporation, the Kodiak Launch Complex and other facilities. There is a better affinity if it's affiliated with the military in order to get funding. And that was the main driver for that, but we're looking forward to bringing the Alaska Aerospace Corporation along with a cooperative effort with the economic folks. So we're not moving at 100% without a lot of input from those folks.
Question from Chairman Stoltz.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. General Cactus, what do you anticipate to be the capital and operating investment through your department on this? What are you anticipating this is going to cost to take to that next step?
The actual input from our department is a zero balance, but I want to make sure that I check with Ms. Colligan on that, that our note on that was zero balance, although we're looking to have operating costs for them, but we're going to be approaching on that. So
if we're playing auction, I'm going to take your bid because there's been other folks are talking about bigger numbers, but a lot. So maybe I'm not asking the right question the right way, but I was actually thought you might throw a number out, and I was just going to be comparing numbers, but yours is way too low to be real.
Well, certainly, because you're talking about a base cost that is going to be between $4 and $10 million out there. Also, if those are the numbers that we're talking along those lines, but like I say, even that's pretty wide gamut. And this is fairly new, and I'm going to go off into dangerous territories if I'm not fully briefed on what I'm going to be talking about here.
Fair enough.
Third priority, we're going to increase the number of graduates that come out of the challenge program. And then we're going to also be looking at these new benefits that our service members have, active and National Guardsmen, that they have acquired as a result of their service with post-9/11 GI Bill. So getting some of the educational benefits to those members is critical. Yeah, with that, I will open
to a question from Representative Guerra.
Thank you. General, just on the Aerospace Corporation, it's largely focused on private launches. It largely has lost money. There is some discussion about them asking us for a fair amount of money to keep the facility going, given the paucity of private use there. So is what you're saying that you're going to try and get the federal government to use the facility more with federal money so that there won't be state money involved? Is that?
Yeah. It's still a private business like the railroad or like an airport. And the state monies that would come in would be those base operating costs. Those costs go forward, and you don't necessarily see a direct return, but as economic impact to a community, you have employment opportunities, you have educational incentives, you've got other things that are economic drivers for the state of Alaska that having one of the very few space launch facilities that we're capitalizing on being a northern state, being able to grab access to a polar orbit, the potential for development of that means a greater working population, a better interaction with the university to develop the students that are going through or going through the college for future job employment. What you're looking for is not a loss, it's an investment. Because for $4 or $10 million, if that's a base operating cost and those cover keeping the lights on and keeping the facility operating, then you bid out those contracts. You don't make that a part of the bid because that is part of the investment strategy to draw those type of resources in here. So I'm not sure if I'm getting your question there, but I don't see that as...
Are you saying that you're going to get more federal launches that are going to bring in money?
I'm saying that by an affiliation with the military still being a primary customer. There's still going to be the GCI access. People are going to want to launch private satellites. But there's also a lot of military use that just by the affiliation is what I've been briefed. If they are affiliated with the military, it makes it that much more palatable to try to interact and secure some type of federal funding.
Okay. I have one question, and that's in regards to your recruiting ability. Is there any school districts refusing to let you come? I think a few years ago there was a problem in one or something.
Through the chair, Representative Thomas, I think that's one of the good news stories. We have had very good access. There's still individuals that, on a personal basis, but outright, we have not had that problem that I'm aware of brought up to my attention that I've had to address. We've had very good access to our schools and very good support.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, we got two. Okay, Representative Costello first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. General, I've had the opportunity of working with students who ended up at the Alaska Military Youth Academy, and I just wanted to say that it's a phenomenal program, and the way you turn those kids around and get them focused on the things that matter is really worth noting. I've also had the opportunity of touring it several times, so I think that's wonderful. And on another note, my father was a World War II veteran, and so I think you do a great job with the veteran cemeteries. So I wanted to mention that. My question, though, is about something that I find troubling, which goes back to what Representative Guerra brought up, which is the issue of homeless veterans. And I was wondering if you'd be willing to provide some leadership in that area and perhaps lead some sort of a a look or a task force or something that looks into that problem in Alaska.
Through the chair, Representative Costello. As I mentioned to Representative Guerra, certainly interested in all of that. You can tell that I've got enthusiasm, and I'm certainly looking for new ideas on where I can move the department. And first of all, though, I don't know how to solve a problem if I don't have an idea what the problem is, so identifying that problem. So this hearing today has certainly caught my attention, and I'm going to be discussing this with my staff to see where we're at on that.
Thank you.
Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. General, I'm pondering this business about the Aerospace Corporation. I understand that we're pumping more money into it and that we will be, no matter who, what chain of command it's located in. I'm curious to know, you're a guy who's used to sort of looking at situations and evaluating them, at what point, if there's no improvement in the Aerospace Corporation's ability to, you know, do its job or, you know, pay its bills or do any of that kind of stuff. At what point would you come back to the legislature and say, you know, this baby isn't working, we should close it up?
To the chair, Representative Dugan, I don't know that I've got the ability to give you a good answer on that. But it is my responsibility that when I do see that point, and it is able to be articulated clearly, that you will, you can rest assured, I will be there standing in front of you and giving that answer.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, briefly.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you. Representative Costello's question led me to, you got pretty close to an answer, which is, will you be willing to discuss the issue of homeless veterans with somebody? And your indication was you'd be interested if you knew who they were. And there's, you know, sometimes when you're an activist on an issue, you rankle feathers, and there's an activist by the name of Rick Davich who's been trying to start up a Housing First project out in the valley. And I can't tell you for sure that it's the greatest idea in the world from what I've seen of it. It addresses part of the homeless problem, part of the alcoholism problem. And I guess all I'll ask is, if you get a phone call from Mr. Davidge, would you talk to him?
Yes, sir. To the chair, yes, sir.
I'm just going to make one comment on that. I have many veterans who fall into that crack. And you being a military active, know that one thing that the military teaches you is pride, dignity, and it's hard to shed it. And people tell you you're homeless and you're drunk. They still think they're in the military and they're charging on. And I've had friends that I've got their disability papers for, got them signed, but they wouldn't go to Anchorage to get the physical. They just resist, you know. I mean, it's instilled in them that they're tough, and they'll take that with them. So, any other comments?
Sure. I'd just like to acknowledge one of our volunteers on the Veterans Advisory Commission, Bert Hall, leader on veterans issues. Just the front row there, no stranger, anybody that's lived in Alaska, served the state and this nation in a lot of capacities. And I was a volunteer on that board, that commission I referenced earlier. And I have high regard for him.
Thank you. With that, General, we thank you for being here today. Unless there was, I don't see any questions, so appreciate the Guard and everything they do. I know they're very active in my district, and we have a lot of veterans there. For the benefit of the Finance Committee, we will be meeting tomorrow at 1:30, Mental Health and Trust, and Transportation Public Facilities Overview at 1:30. And we have to adjourn this meeting, and we come back and don't leave your seats because then we have the University Subcommittee. So with that, we're adjourned.